football on Off the Ball.
It got to the stage where it was almost Olay football from Armenia, and if that's where we're at now, that really is a scary thought.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
Anyone can dream it, but to be it, you must never stop competing. Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish women's rugby.
Right then, quarterfinal weekend at the Women's Rugby World Cup largely went as planned. On Saturday, New Zealand beat South Africa 46-17. Canada beat Australia well as well, 46-5 was the scoreline there. Yesterday then, England comfortable as you'd expect against Scotland, 40-8, but Ireland nearly the fly in the ointment ahead against France at half time, 18-13 to France. The full time score. Fiona Hayes and Anna Capelist are with us on the line to discuss. Fiona and Anna, a very good evening to you. How are you keeping?
Good, Owen. We're still in mourning here, I think, but we're doing okay.
Is it mourning?
Do we have to talk about rugby?
Well, it's interesting that mourning is the word you use, because it really felt like regret bordering on frustration at full time. But really, Fiona, I wonder if today it's actually just widespread anger for obvious reasons.
Yeah, look, I think there's definitely a bit of that. At that level, you just expect, we all know, I'm alluding to the Aoife Wafer, the bite on Aoife Wafer. France scored shortly after that. It would have been, yes, it was a penalty to Ireland, but it also would have been looking at that. And if it was seen and the video approved, they would have been down a man or a player for the rest of the game. So it was a big point. Look, in Ireland, don't want to win like that, but it just comes out on the back of a couple of decisions as well, Owen, that didn't go their way. The one that frustrated me the most, like really frustrated me, was the last try that France scored. And I really don't like coming on and talking about a referee, because obviously everyone, or, you know, TMOs or whatever, everyone's trying to do their very best, and I totally understand that. But that was like a ruck. If it wasn't a ruck, the ball spilled out the side, the player never got back onside, and in turn, unbelievable play from France Owen to do those hands and magic and getting the outside. And not very many people beat Amy Lee for pace, and they certainly did that on that outside, and it was a brilliant try. But at the time, I mean, I was just looking at it going, I mean, it doesn't even look right. If it doesn't look, how can she be standing there? Like, you can't stick your hands in there. But look, those type of moments, I suppose, are what's frustrating. And then on the side of Ireland's thing, they look at those 35 phases for halftime, and that is very... So there's anger on one side, and then that is the frustrating part, that France were exceptional in defence, but Ireland just weren't clinical enough in that area.
Yeah, Anna, do you want to come in on that point? I mean, a couple of those decisive moments that clearly weren't officiated correctly. Is that your overarching feeling on this Monday evening, or is it really kind of more granular? And are you thinking, like Fiona, about that passage of play before halftime?
Yeah, I'm thinking of it all. And I don't think there's anybody standing here saying we would have won if that red card was given, or if that was reviewed, or, you know, I don't think that's what... That was certainly the feeling at full time. The full time feeling was, what? I can't believe this has finished the way it has. But as you kind of like reflect on it, and how we spoke about it during the match, like the 13-0 scoreline at half time was just so small. It was just such a small margin against a French side who could just go, you know, bang, bang, and score two tries and probably, you know, potentially convert them as well. And then, you know, it's all even. Like, for the amount of possession that Ireland had, they just didn't convert it enough. And, you know, it's kind of a similar feeling against the Black Ferns. You know, they were able to create platform and just couldn't finish it. And, like, they did score tries yesterday, you know, in the first half, which was great, but there was just still an element of wastefulness. And, like, you know, we can say that, you know, 35 phases and it didn't come to anything, but also, I don't know, 35 phases is really, really long time to keep patience, to keep your head and keep your confidence. And like that wasn't the only time. Like, even in the second half, like, Ireland still looked so confident on the ball, but they just couldn't turn it into anything. The refereeing is just, I just think it goes hand in hand with the whole day, that it just, it all contributes to the feeling of the opportunity getting away. I don't, like I said, I don't think anyone's saying that's what lost it for us, but I'm gobsmacked at some of the decisions, and I the same as Fiona, I hate standing here and talking about officiating in this manner, but when you've got a referee who clearly can't see everything, and my goodness, it was I having to resist saying they're offside like so many times, and she eventually gave it, but the touch judges weren't helping her at all. They're supposed to help her. She doesn't have eyes in the back of her head. The TMO, if he didn't know what to do with that situation, there is also an FPRO, a foul play review officer. What is that person? What is that person's role if not to look at an incident like that? You know, the FPRO is obviously there to take the pressure off the time you need to make the decision as the TMO and the bunker, okay? If he wasn't sure, the intent around the bite is shocking. The referee was stood right in front of it. She couldn't make a decision on it. The disrespect for having brought forward the issue from Aoife Wafer, first of all, she doesn't have to listen to Aoife Wafer, but she does have to listen to the captain, and Sam Monaghan went to her twice. And it's just really disrespectful and just hugely disappointing. And it goes along with the wasteful opportunities of Ireland. You know, there's a few things there. I'm not saying that the officiating lost it for us, but all of those things impacted the result.
Yeah, definitely. And because if it was just a situation where an offside was missed or there was the rule book not being applied properly in a certain instance, you'd have every right to be frustrated. But I think what's winding people up quite a lot today is the fact that it was a bite. This is not something that happens by accident. This is something that happens right in front of the referee as well, and totally fair that she misses the incident. That's why you have the TMO. That's why you have the extra officials around the place. I think it's the nature of it, and the fact that there's a 12-week ban supposedly being handed down today as well. That's actually salt in the wounds, Anna.
Yeah, it is salt in the wounds. It's like, well, you know, what good is that now? And obviously citing, you know, the citing process is in place for these things that are missed, because, you know, there's, you can't see everything. But with the combination, there were so many factors that could have identified this. I didn't see it. I was on comms. I didn't see it. I think, Fiona, you saw it. And we didn't see it when I went down to the panel afterwards. I hadn't seen anything till afterwards. And I was shocked that we had missed it, but it wasn't being shown on the telly. It was shown on the big screen, and the crowd did their part. You know, the crowd has such an important part to play there as well, and always does at a rugby match, that, you know, they'll say, oh my God, and it's a really natural response, and it kind of, that sometimes that hints at the ref and the TMO. So there was that, there was Sam Monaghan, there was Aoife Wafer, there was touch judges, referees, everything, and it still went amiss. And we could be here talking about a semi-final last week if that had been officiated properly.
Fiona, final word to you on this point, because there's loads from the match I want to discuss as well. Like, what's your general sense of things in the stadium? Like, is it immediately clear that some sort of injustice has happened? Because I must say, live on television, it wasn't automatically clear. So what was it like in the stadium?
Yeah, look, I mean, Aoife was going for the turnover. You're not really going to see it there in that second. But when when I first kind of saw it, was when Aoife Wafer stood up and said, she's after biting me. You could clearly read her lips.
Yeah.
And she was showing her hand. And then I think they showed the clip. Obviously, it's not as zoomed in with those gum shields. You can't see anything, but I think it's pretty clear and concise that something did go down there. And it's very, very unusual. And I spoke a good bit about it, but I will tell you this. It's absolutely very unusual that someone would say they were bitten and they weren't. So it like, for the referee not, or someone not to even have a look at that, because you can always go back to it. You can let play, you can let Ireland take the penalty that they earned, and then you can go back and address it. So I was shocked, but certainly in the stadium and around me, I think everybody was focused on the turnover, because it was such a great turnover. It was unbelievable when Aoife Wafer started saying it. I suppose what I didn't understand was, if it was me, if France scored, I think soon after that, I would still, Sam Monaghan did address it, and she done really like a really good role as a captain. But when Dana was up for the kickoff, I would have been saying, this is absolutely disgrace, getting inside the referee's head again. They, to be fair to the girls, and it was probably the right thing to do. They just parked it and moved on with the match. But certainly it's so frustrating. The crowd were frustrated, and then it started to filter through from home on as well, through texts, through pictures, through, I mean, I think it was maybe 3 minutes before all the funny memes were being made already, like about French eating hands and eating wafer and whatever. So look, that came in fairly quickly, we know that. So I think it just filtered out as the game went on, but certainly the players moved on and got on with things. It's just disappointing that they had to do that.
There seemed to be a general sense yesterday that Ireland were inside the French heads. Obviously, look, France have had the last laugh in all of this, but why do you think that was the case, Anna? Why do you think France were so frustrated by Ireland?
There were a few things, and I actually thought about this before the match. I was like, if Ireland can start with the intensity that they got from the New Zealand game, France haven't hit that yet. You know, they'd had kind of easy run-ins. They were really enjoying themselves, scoring loads of tries against Brazil and South Africa. They hadn't been pushed by opposition that Ireland had been pushed by just the week before. And I've been in those situations where you have a really intense match previous, and then you're able to carry that intensity through to the following week. Ireland did that, number one. And then France couldn't meet that, number two. The other thing was the weather and the conditions, like winning the toss and using that. It was done really well, was managed brilliantly and beautifully by Dan O'Brien, and they used the conditions, like, because we were kind of, you know, hunkering down for a game of just the forwards picking and going all day, but actually to have Dana just like putting back the bombs, and like the back three being really under pressure underneath it and fumbling. And that was really, that they were all moments that were getting under France's skin. And with the weather, they didn't want to play. They're just like, oh, like they just weren't up for it, which you can predict before a match. So if you do ABC, if these things happen, you will get under French skin. And Pauline Bourdon-Sansus, who had been outstanding for them the 2 weeks previous, and she had served a ban in the first game, then came back in versus Brazil, South Africa. She gets player of the match in both those games, loving it, running riot, like quick tap, and off she'd go. Like, she didn't have the opportunity to do that. And then she kind of lost interest or got frustrated that she doesn't have other answers. But she's such a key player for them. And if she's quiet, they lose a bit of their spark. So it was a lot of those factors that worked for in Ireland's favour. And then at the same time, they're still able to score from nothing, number one, and still defend really well.
Yeah.
And sorry, just on that as well, Anna, how rattled were the French with the scrum? I mean, you know, just French pride themselves on overpowering the likes of Ireland, maybe not so much England, but certainly Italy, like at scrum time, even at set piece time, line out time. And you could see they were absolutely rattled by losing that scrum battle, and they lost it throughout the whole game as well.
Was this a big step forward from Ireland in terms of the scrum? Because there were green shoots the previous week against the Black Ferns as well. Is it just the opposition maybe was a little bit more forgiving this week compared to the previous week, because the Ireland scrum, as you point out, was really, really strong, Fiona?
No, I think going, they've been just getting better and better. I spoke with you, I think it was last week as well, on that and how they're dominating teams now, whereas they went through a period where they were just setting and holding, just so they could get their body shape, get their connections right. We saw that for a couple of Six Nations games, especially last year. But as it went on, as the confidence grew, as the pack started connecting and working together, their scrum has been absolutely outstanding. And I said it as well, when the bench comes on, Cliona Maloney even injects more into that scrum than the props. She's unbelievable scrummager for a hooker. So I think that's an area probably they've been getting more and more dominant in. Teams don't associate it with Ireland, because in general we're not the biggest pack. But certainly I think after that performance against France, they're going to be, other teams are going to be analysing it a lot more.
When it comes to that 35 phase passage of play before the break, there's obviously an element of regret when Ireland go into the dressing room, you'd imagine, but they come back out 30-0 up. There was a sense maybe, Fiona, if France had started that second half on fire, this could actually be a very quick sort of second half where they'll get their noses in front and then it's curtains. How did Ireland actually hold playing into the wind for that second half, did you figure?
Yeah, look, I thought the way they came out at half time, you know, other than that 35 phases, I thought the game management in the first half was absolutely superb, how they kicked. I know a lot of people would have liked to see a bit more attacking ball and attacking rugby, but certainly I enjoyed how Dana controlled it in the second half. I think you could see there was a slight change in that. She was probably, I don't know if Anna will agree with me, I think in the second half and game management wise, they probably overused the forwards because of that wind, and we didn't need to do that because our back skill set, we just couldn't get the ball wide. So I felt like the game management area of things, while they held France and were physically good, I think their tackle rate was up in the 90%, which would be very, very good. I think they only missed 15. France were the same. They had some I think they missed 11 tackles. So physically, I think everyone was really dominant. Everyone was up for it defensively, but certainly game management from Ireland in that second half going into a wind. And I know it, as a coach myself, you do like to use your forwards, but not against that French brick wall. We could see Aoife Wafer, you know, she had to play the full weight. She was absolutely outstanding for it all, but certainly at times you could see she was being overused. She was a little bit tired. Brittany was the same. So I just would have liked a little bit of something different in that in attack. But defensively, I was impressed how they came out and started that second half, because you can drop your head as well when you're going in at that. And France could have run right, but they held them. And yes, France got the scores, but I thought they done very, very well how they controlled the first few minutes.
Because it seemed, Anna, as if the conditions were a little more forgiving in the second half as well. So Ireland weren't playing into as strong a breeze as France were in the first half.
Definitely. And like the wind is coming against you. So if you have enough depth, there's not too much of a worry that you'll knock the ball on or the ball is being blown away from you. It's actually being blown back into you. So you can afford to have a bit more depth in your backline and attack. But like the thing about the carries, and they were great. Like the work from the forwards was phenomenal, but you're not going to win. Like the goal of like those hard carries isn't to score or break the line. It's to suck in the defenders. It's to interest the defenders and make them panic. And like they did that really well. But that means that space opens up somewhere else. And the space, like even the crowd was all like pointing down into the corners, pointing at the space that Amy Lee had. But it was really clear that maybe they just didn't feel confident themselves. They didn't feel kind of empowered to make that decision to like crack it out wide, because they were winning meters around those breakdowns. But then it just takes one kind of slower hit and then you lose kind of 3 or 4 meters again. That's what seemed to keep happening, but they were doing the job perfectly. It's the pick and go, it's not to score. Like I hate when, you know, like in the forwards, like the backs are like, God, the forwards will never pass the ball out because they just want to pick and go all the time. The forwards will pick and go until the backs want the ball. So like a pick and go is to be used to either, yeah, fine, break down a weak defence, but the French are not a weak defence, but they did get sucked in and it opened up the ball. That's when you call it out and that's when you get it out wide. And I just felt like they just didn't feel empowered to do it. Maybe even Amy Lee was kind of waving, but things she felt like, oh, this isn't the game plan. So should I be kind of confusing the messages here and just stick to the plan? Because there's so much to be said for sticking to the process. And then there's, you know, do you feel empowered to kind of make a decision that you know is kind of high risk, high reward, but it's so much space out wide that it just, a few quick passes and Amy Lee was in.
Well, whose job is it to flick that switch, Anna? Is it down to the halfbacks? Is it down to the coaching ticket to get that message on there? Like, I mean, does Amy Lee actually have the authority to get a message down to the ruck and say, listen, lads, get it out to me. Look at what's actually happening here.
She absolutely should have. So whether that's, you know, she's a confident player as well, and she is one of the leaders. I would back her to make those decisions. Whether there was just a message of like, look, the conditions are too risky. And Fran, if we get caught with a bobbling ball in the wider channels, France will be gone. So, you know, it's not the worst game plan, because France are, we can see, so lethal off a turnover that would have been really punishing. But then you build your confidence in your catch pass. I think it's a management thing, and I think that they didn't feel confident enough to go against the management game plan. Like I could be very wrong here, but that's what it felt like when I saw Amy Lee kind of waving but not wanting to, like, absolutely demand the ball, because there was a game plan there which was just to pick and go and keep it in the forwards.
Do you think, and this was my view as a spectator who's absolutely not in the high performance mindset at all, do you think that they were spooked by how poor France were in the first half? Because they were like, oh God, we've now got to take up that mantle in the second half. And it was almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, whereas the reality was that the conditions were softer in the second half and they had found a little bit more space.
Yeah, could be. I think that it was a long time to hold on to a lead. Your mindset kind of changes there. Oh no, we're not trying to score anymore. We're just trying to hold on to the lead. So, yeah, maybe the mindset there, maybe that's right. That's a kind of an accurate way of putting it, that they were like, okay, now we just have to, like, calm down, instead of actually like, okay, we have to score at all costs, which is that change of mentality from the start. I don't know, Fiona, do you agree?
No, but, like, even what I noticed, and it was almost, you're talking about grinding out that lead as well, but what I noticed is, right, you get a penalty advantage, or the referee's hands go out, right? I'm not saying you crossfield kick for the sake of crossfield kicking, but Ireland were doing 15 phases in, like, the space of 10 metres. So they weren't even trying anything on the advantage. So they weren't backing their off the cup rugby. What I felt like was they were actually almost winding down the clock. So they do that for maybe 3 minutes and they haven't moved very far, and she'd eventually go back and give the penalty. This happened about 4 or 5 times in that second half. Whereas I would have loved for them to give Amy Lee, give Bavin a crack. We know how good they are, but for some reason they kept it very, very tight. And Anna spoke about it. It could be from up high, but certainly as a coach, I know, and maybe Dana could have taken a little bit control there as well. I know that once that penalty advantage goes out, whatever happens after that, you're not going to absolutely kill a team for leaving the playbook or leaving what's there. You trust the players then to have a crack and try something. Not something completely stupid, but certainly try and get the ball to space and attack somewhere they hadn't been attacking at all.
Fiona, I know you've got to go in just a minute, but very keen to get your big picture takeaway on this World Cup. Mm. Like, I don't know, I think there is a whole heap of positivity to be taken away from yesterday, given the context of the Black Ferns game the previous week, which kind of felt like a bit of a rude awakening for the team. At the same time, you've got all this injustice wrapping up the storylines. But maybe in the long term, that's exactly how you want to leave a World Cup like this. Maybe that's the sort of thing that'll drive this group on. Like, I mean, I can't wait to play France again next year. Can't wait for the game of the Aviva against Scotland. There's lots to look forward to. So what way are you looking at this World Cup, Fiona?
Yeah, look, I just think it was absolutely amazing for them. We know that the All Blacks game didn't go to plan, but certainly I'll be honest with you, I didn't predict that. I felt like France was going to be the game where we were going to see these girls come to life. I felt they would beat Japan and Spain. To watch them dead out on their feet, to watch someone like Aoife Wafer come in, having played any minutes of rugby, be able to put in the full 80, falling around the place, looking so distraught because they know that they probably could have won that game. That's not something I would have expected 2 years ago. This team, and even in the media, I don't know if Anna's the same, literally the chat from everybody around, from all the different nations, all the different people there was, oh my God, they're still so young. They've got so much growing to do. So it's already excitement ahead of these young players in the pack, players in the backline. You'll always have a few that won't be involved, but them growing and watching them 4 years. Yes, we've the Six Nations, but I think come next World Cup, we're going to see a different ball game altogether. And I'm just so proud of how they have brought the game along, how they have stayed off after every match. All the teams done it. This World Cup has been absolutely superb. Signing kids' autographs, running over to people, hugging families, just bringing the game. You know, you're talking about bringing the game to a higher level. These girls have certainly done it. The green wave, they brought that in. And I think anybody that went to any of the games just felt such a buzz. And then the timing of that Aviva announcement to come out as well. Make sure you get tickets. It's time to get on and get those tickets, because we want to. Imagine a fairly packed out Aviva watching these girls play Scotland. It's just unbelievable, and I think they deserve it, and they deserved a few weeks off as well. I think they put everything on the line. It didn't go to plan. we went out, myself and Anna went for a few drinks with a few of them last night. There was a lot of singing, as you do Irish style, but you could see some of them were really, really hurting. But they still enjoyed themselves as well. But unbelievable for them to just come home and hold their heads high. Yes, we'll all speak about what they could have done better, what they should have done better. But as an overall tournament, I'm so, so proud of them.
Fiona Hayes, thank you very much for being with us this evening. We're going to let you go. Anna, you might stay with us. We're just going to take a quick break and we'll get Anna Capus's post tournament thoughts back in a few.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
Anyone can dream it, but to be it, you must never stop competing. Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish women's rugby.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
Anyone can dream it, but to be it, you must never stop competing. Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish women's rugby.
You are welcome back. Anna Capus is still with us on the line, reflecting on the World Cup campaign for Ireland, obviously ending in real disappointment yesterday. And I think the evidence is there that this can be used as a massive platform for this team. It's interesting to hear that the talk around Ireland at the moment, that this is a young team that will be back. At the same time, there's going to be more expectation in 4 years' time, and not to kind of wallow in yesterday too much, but a young team without too much baggage in that position, 13-0 up at halftime, you do wonder if that was a hell of an opportunity to make a semi-final, and it's going to be just as hard in 4 years' time.
There's no wondering there, really. Like, that was it. That was they couldn't have created a better opportunity for themselves. But that's it. Like, that's sport. Like, France, the way they celebrated, like, I was angry watching it. I was like, oh, like, you don't deserve this at all. But actually, they just are a team. Like, when you can win with so little possession, you know, that's what World Cups are for. That's what sport is. Just because you play well doesn't mean you get to win. And just because you deserved it doesn't mean you get to win either. So it's so cruel. Sport can be so cruel. And like, you just have to use that to get the best out of yourself going forward. Yeah, it's a massive missed opportunity. They know it themselves. It'll be some people's last World Cup, you know, and that this was it. And I suppose the positive, you know, outlook is that they finished on a super performance. Like, it was really, they really kept their best performance. And like, with the injury profile and with the fatigue from the pool stages that France didn't have, how they were able to play is just, it has made for a really exciting future and a really exciting next few years. I suppose winning yesterday would have been phenomenal. You go into the semi-final next week versus England. You know, England are kind of stuck in maybe third, fourth gear, like, but they, you know, they don't need much, and we know what they can produce. Like, it can be at any stage a bloodbath with England, especially if you're as fatigued as this Ireland team would certainly be going into next week. But even if you lost against England, you'd have a third place playoff, and then you're playing the loser of Black Ferns in Canada. So it could have then gone on to be two big, you know, big losses. It could have. That could have been, you know, so it could have been, despite, you know, yesterday's, if they got a winning result yesterday, that would have remained like the highest point of it. And then you finish on two really tough fixtures then as well. So I suppose they can just be super proud that they finished in the manner that they finished. And the only kind of thing that they can, you know, be frustrated with is just not converting the opportunities that they created for themselves.
There are a number of questions around the people who will be mentoring this team over the next couple of years. For example, Alex Codling, who has had glowing reviews from the players. That was his last game as forwards coach, because he's going to join Munster to begin his new full-time job there. There seems to be bit more of a grey area around Gareth Steenson, although it does seem likely that his role is finishing up as well, because Johnny Sexton's new role is going to be working with the women's team as well as the men's team. We'll get to Scott Beaman in a moment, but they'd be two significant enough departures and things that they need to recover from as well.
Yeah, and any change of management is going to have to refine itself. I suppose what you can take, and like, Gareth Steenson's such an interesting character. Like, I spoke to him last night, and so little that I know about him really, or that I knew, and I was just like, God, I wish I'd known more about him and might have understood his role a bit more. Like, it's great to hear him over the ref's mic yesterday when he was like chatting to Dana and she kicked, and he was, you know, they just seemed to have a really good relationship, like him passing on messages. Like, she'll take the learnings from that, and she'll know what a high standard of you know, kicking coach is, and the other kickers, you know, that are involved. And I suppose one thing that we, you know, need to one of the many things that we need to improve are the kicking options as well. So take the learnings from him and Alex, and like keep that within the squad, you know, like that standard is there now, those higher standards. So anyone that comes in actually needs to surpass that now, because those standards are already there. So we can't dip now. There can't be a fall off here of like, geez, they did a great job now, so let's just kind of throw in whoever wants it, as opposed to finding and seeking out like the best personnel. Yeah. To get more out of this team now, because it's not just Ireland that needs to improve here. Like, every country has gone away from this World Cup wanting more. Every single one. Like, look at South Africa. Look at Scotland. They've been brilliant as well. Like, it's not just about Ireland. Like, if Ireland really want to contend and do better the next time round, there's got to be huge improvements. And not because they were poor at this World Cup, but everyone else is going to be improving hugely as well.
Like, I mean, we've got new information obviously over the last number of weeks. Should it not be the case that somebody like Steenson and his job is actually more analysed at this point, and the idea of keeping him on in the IRFU in some capacity should actually be entertained?
Absolutely. I mean, that wouldn't that happen in the men's game? Like, if there was someone that has had a really good impact, and especially you're getting that feedback from the players, it needs to be listened to and respected, and thinking, okay, how do we keep this person involved and keep their expertise instead of letting someone like that go? I didn't feel like maybe before or in the past we would have been guilty of that, like just kind of making easy choices and just putting a team together that, you know, just okay, that's done now, tick, all those boxes are ticked, whereas actually kind of getting uncomfortable in your selection decisions for management, like who will make the best team as well. But that's the thing, you know, Scott Beaman was very adamant to bring his own team in. That doesn't always work either, so there's got to be really careful considerations around like who is, if that is happening, as if there are going to be changes in terms of head coach, which I feel like there could be, you know, that whoever's coming in is what are they going to be bringing people with them or bringing their own coaching team, or how is it going to work?
Well, and that is the big question when it comes to the coaching ticket, is that Beaman has 1 year remaining on his deal. It runs until after the Six Nations next year. What is the future of that position? Do you think, given the work that he's done over the last 18 months, that the ball's kind of in his court, that, you know, if Scott Beaman wants to stay on as head coach, he will get that job, no question, or does he still have something to prove?
Yeah, they're, you know, going back to the conversation we were just having, like, are the players getting the best out of themselves? Like, why isn't Amy Lee getting on the ball, and Bevan and others? Like, why? He's obviously brought an awful lot. There are obviously still elements there going, you know, reflecting on our conversation from earlier, that need to be explored. To get so far and then to not be maximising players like that, and including our centres who have been like standouts of the tournament, you know, and in Eve Higgins and Aoife Dalton, like they've just been like phenomenal. So yeah, of course, but as long as he's learning and improving, that's okay, and that there's an acknowledgement there. But essentially, it'll have to come down to the players. What is the player feedback? Winning and doing well can mask a lot of problems. You know, this isn't this is just, you know, from my experience in the past, like that winning can you know, cover up problems that might exist. So there has to be a real true, you know, transparent review about all aspects of it after the World Cup, and it'll come down to what the players themselves feel, because they're the ones that are on the pitch.
Yeah, it's a really good point that you make about Amy Lee yesterday. Like, is there a game plan at work here that does not encourage the full potential of Ireland's backs. Like, and look, maybe there's a rationale for that, where, you know, Dorothy Wall, Aaron King, Aoife Wafer, three of your best players, and you want to play around their strengths. But I think your analysis earlier is really, really interesting, that you're in the white heat of the most important game of your career and you're not actually utilising some of your best weapons.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, those players, I've worked with so many coaches who just kind of want ready-made players to fit their own ideas. What you can also get is then, you know, someone who wants, sees what they have and then, you know, clings on this. Okay, I'll build around this. But what about everyone else then? You know, like, how do you get the max out of the other players? Like, our back line is unreal. Like, why didn't they get the ball yesterday? And not just yesterday, do you know, against New Zealand. And, you know, your job is done when the space has been created somewhere else. Mm. You spend all week working on set piece, you know, making, you know, physical, like making yourself physically a better player. It's not to score a try. It's to manipulate a defence and to defend when you're on the defensive side. Fine. But in attack, you're not trying to score off every phase. So you have to have the moving parts and they all have to complement each other. So, you know, if you have exactly like we were saying, you know, a team like France who can defend the Ireland's best asset, apparently, you know, which is the forwards going and going and going. If they just defend that all day, like for 35 phases, what are your other options? It's not like we had inexperience out there. They are phenomenal, really well-known, trustworthy, confident players. And they just, you know, they weren't maximized, at least not yesterday, but I feel like maybe in this campaign as a whole. But as long as that's being learned from and improved and adapted, but it's too late now for this cycle. Could have been, you know, a really easy fix for yesterday, just like maybe a little crossfield kick and it could have all been different. But, you know, if it's not part of your game plan because you don't feel it's going to work, I don't understand why that would be part of the conversation when you have someone like Amy Lee and Bevan Parsons out there.
Yeah, and like as kind of a final point, and there's not really too much of an excuse for this given how long their build into this tournament was, but it does feel that at the end of, you know, the last couple of Six Nations and at the end of this tournament, you're kind of left wanting more, or you kind of wish there was another couple of games. Obviously, you've been knocked out of a World Cup. Of course, you want there to be an extra couple of games. But I mean that it feels that the team kind of come together and an extra couple of weeks would really take them on to another level. And I think that's probably one of the big questions that, you know, Irish rugby needs to answer over the next little while, about the exposure to top level rugby for a number of these players. Like, we can't keep exporting our best players to the Premiership. What are the options available to our best talents in this country? And that's a more root and branch conversation to have, Anna, but a solution really does need to be found in the next 2 years so that we're not having the same conversation at the end of this World Cup cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about exporting your players, and this has kind of come up a lot in conversation recently, is that if you are exporting your players to the Premiership, you're not going to be in leadership roles in the Premiership. You might be a really standout player, you might be a really good player, and you might be some kind of amongst some unit leadership. But those roles are really reserved for the English players, because the Premiership is designed around fortifying an English team. So any foreign player, Wales have this problem. Wales have all their girls in so many teams, and very few of them are in captaincy roles in those teams. So apart from, you know, game time and stuff, there's that element that needs to be built as well. If we're using a Celtic challenge, which is what the plan is, the other teams need to be strong as well. Like, and I know we spoke about this around Six Nations time. I was worried, and we all are worried, that the Celtic challenge wasn't going to prime our players well enough, because you had Scott Beaman, who was saying, like, oh, the Celtic challenge has prepared us really well, us being the team, like the main cohort. And then you had Sean Lynn and Brian Eason saying, oh, we found some development players in the Celtic challenge. Like, that shouldn't be happening at all. Like, that you need to have, like, high quality from all of the teams to get the most out of the Celtic challenge for the Clovers and the Wolfhounds. it's still a work in progress, which is annoying. The good side to it is that I was nervous that the Celtic Challenge wasn't going to prepare us enough. They did enough work on their own to be well primed, and they got what they needed from the Celtic Challenge, and then they did their own homework to be prepared, and they did that really well. So there is that element to it, and maybe they weren't so fatigued from the Celtic Challenge that they were able to just, you know, kick the heads off each other a little bit more inside in training. But nothing can emulate playing, and that is one thing as well. Like, our decision making under pressure, when you're doing that in your club or your province or your domestic competition, whatever it is, like, it'll come more naturally to you in the international games. So, you know, just look at what England just have all the riches that I'm so envious of, like all of the Premiership teams, like going at it all season against each other. They're all pipped against each other, and they're all putting each under the pressure that they need to then produce for an English side. So I'd love that for Ireland, but it's not what the IRFU have chosen in terms of using our AIL and our own domestic league. It's not going to be used. So now we just kind of have to wait until the Celtic Challenge gets stronger. But maybe someone like Wales is going to, you know, with their kind of whatever, however they're, you know, going to build across the next few years. But maybe that whole, they were so poor this World Cup, maybe they're going to look at that as an element of, okay, there's too many of us in the Premiership, we need to get a stronger domestic league and a Celtic Challenge. I don't know. It's a lot of moving parts there, but as long as, you know, the other teams in the Celtic Challenge are kind of still figuring out what they're to do, Ireland just have a lot of work to do in camp.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be the reality. You have been listening to Anna Capeless and the Women's Rugby World Cup show, and Off the Ball is with Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Never stop competing. Anna, thanks a million for everything during the tournament. All the best.
Thanks a million.
Cheers.
See you in 2029.
See you in 2029. We'll take a quick break.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
Anyone can dream it, but to be it, you must never stop competing. Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish women's rugby.